choline is going into betaine, then if you add betaine, you don't need the choline to do that, right? The problem becomes, as I indicated in the first two, right, the two primary roles for choline is into acetylcholine and into the phospholipids. So betaine can't conserve choline in those fashions, right? So for the pig, the one advantage the pig has over poultry is that there's a pathway for the pig to actually synthesize choline, right? And so then it can synthesize choline and then meet the need for those first two pathways, which then means betaine can support the other use of choline, right? But that's to a limited standpoint. In poultry, that's a little bit more challenging. They don't have that same capacity to synthesize choline, and so then betaine can't meet, right? Because they can't synthesize enough, betaine can't move into the first two pathways, so they still have to have more in their diet.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Summer challenges finish your pig performance. Digestrum Finish can help. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/finish. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions.
Hello, welcome to the SwineNet podcast. I'm Tara Donovan, your host, and today I have Dr. Crystal Levesque as my guest. Dr. Levesque is a professor of monogastric nutrition at South Dakota State University. Welcome to the SwineNet podcast, Crystal.
It's nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So today on our show, we're going to be discussing choline in swine diets. But before we get started, Crystal, will you share with us a little bit more about yourself? Tell us about your background and how you got to South Dakota State.
So I'm originally from the Prairie Province, Saskatchewan, up in Canada. It's actually very similar to where we live now in South Dakota, except that instead of corn and soybeans, you'll see wheat, barley, and canola for the most part. So it's flat like here. It's cold and windy in the wintertime. It's not quite as hot and wet in the summer, but so that's where I came from. I grew up on a mixed farm. We had broilers, cattle, we did a lot of grain farming. The one thing we only had occasionally because Dad wanted it in the freezer were pigs. Outside of that, he didn't want anything to do with the pig. He figured that was for the neighbors down the road. I was older, I guess, when I decided it was time for me to go back to university. I had three kids in school at the time. And so I went back and started in monogastric nutrition, mostly because of Phil Thacker. He was a fabulous instructor. And I just really enjoyed the way he approached the topic. And it was very exciting to me. So that's where I started and ended up in Guelph, doing a postdoc in Guelph. Did my PhD in Alberta and then came here to South Dakota. And besides the fact that they were talking about building a brand new sow unit, one of the other reasons why we really thought South Dakota would be a good fit for us was it was only a 14-hour drive to our adult children in Saskatchewan, and it was 30 hours from Ontario where we were, and we really liked it here.
Great. Thanks for that introduction. And I think people who maybe aren't familiar with the Midwest of, North America, that is definitely about the time when you're thinking about flying, although some of the airports even farther than that are hard to get in and out of. So the driving distance seems very crazy and long, but I also understand.
Yeah.
A worldwide leader in animal nutrition, Adiseo's portfolio of products includes Nephironine, the full range of vitamins, enzymes, organic selenium, probiotics, mycotoxin management strategies, and palatability products. With such a diverse offering, Adiseo supports its customers with a broad range of expertise, tools, and services to help them maintain a competitive advantage. Adiseo, fueling predictable profits. To learn more,
Visit Adiseo at www.adiseo.com.
So thanks for your introduction. We're going to be talking about choline, and I'm a veterinarian, not a nutritionist. So Dr. Levesque, start us off with telling us why choline matters in the diet, explain its essential roles, and that'll give us a basis to get started and talk about its uses.
Sure. Choline is sort of a vitamin. We call it a quasi-vitamin because it's needed in much higher concentration in the diets in comparison to other vitamins. So to put that into context, for example, for a sow, the typical diet concentration of choline might be 1,000 to 1,250 milligrams per kg, whereas vitamin K is 0.2 or 0.5, right? So it's less than one anyway. So less than one in comparison to 1,000. The other thing is the pig, at least, and a little bit in the poultry, they can produce choline. So there's a pathway for them to produce it. So that then plays into how much is needed into the diet, the age of the animal, their capacity to synthesize, that sort of thing. So it's a vitamin, and it's used for three pathways, I guess we'll call it. There's two. The one we think about often most is to make betaine as a methyl donor. Of the three, that's actually quantitatively the lowest use of choline on a quantitative basis. The other two are to make acetylcholine, so that's a neurotransmitter, and then the phospholipids. Right? So the acetylcholine and the phospholipids, those are primary uses. So the body's going to use choline for those purposes first. And then when those are met, then it'll use choline for betaine synthesis.
Great. That helps me a lot to understand its value and its use in the diet. So, we've seen evolution in diets and genetics over the years, right? As we've learned more and gotten more sophisticated with swine diets. So highlight for us how feed formulations and genetics have changed, but the choline needs have remained the same. So let's touch on that a little bit.
Yeah. So some of that is we often just assume, on a relative basis, we often add more vitamins and to our diets than, say, we would if we're using our NRC as sort of our requirement standard, right? We often add way more vitamin than what NRC would suggest if you use the model and you put in the age of animal that you're using, right? And that comes from, a couple of reasons. One, for a lot of those, there hasn't been requirement work done for a long time, right? So as genetics change, maybe the requirement changes. And so that gives us a bit of a safety margin, right? And on a relative scale, it's a little cheaper to do that than spend a lot of work on defining requirements or an updated, I shouldn't call it the NRC anymore. It's the NASEM, the new NASEM book that's being actively worked on right now. Then maybe we'll see some updates a little bit on that based on the information. But our challenge, I guess, or maybe some of why we're talking about this in the first place as, defending choline against alternatives is our usual go-to choline chloride loves water.
So what about betaine? You said that it can essentially turn into betaine, but can you just add more betaine and not have to have as much choline? How does that work?
Yeah. So in part, yes, right? So if choline is going into betaine, then if you add betaine, you don't need the choline to do that, right? The problem becomes, as I indicated in the first two, right, the two primary roles for choline is into acetylcholine and into the phospholipids. So betaine can't conserve choline in those fashions, right? So for the pig, the one advantage the pig has over poultry is that there's a pathway for the pig to actually synthesize choline, right? And so then it can synthesize choline and then meet the need for those first two pathways, which then means betaine can support the other use of choline, right? But that's to a limited standpoint. In poultry, that's a little bit more challenging. They don't have that same capacity to synthesize choline, and so then betaine can't meet, right? Because they can't synthesize enough, betaine can't move into the first two pathways, so they still have to have more in their diet. I had reached out to a couple of commercial nutritionists that I visit with regularly to just see, okay, well, where are you, right? Knowing that if the pig can synthesize, are you still using it? Where do you use it? And they pretty much all said the same thing. We're still using it in the sows. So in the breeding herd, they're still on the pig side of things, they're still using it in the breeding herd. And on the poultry side of things, also in the breeder, so layers, right? So they're still using it there. And turkeys. Why specifically turkeys? I don't know. I didn't have a lot of time to go digging into seeing in turkeys. But so there is still some need, right? But for many, like a grower finisher pig or maybe a broiler, it's for the most part, they're using alternatives as opposed to straight choline itself.
So what about something called biocholine? Tell me about that as an alternative.
So you're talking about the cholines that are maybe derived from the yeast products and right?
I don't know, maybe called synthetic or you know, different cholines.
Yeah, yeah. So those are actually becoming really quite popular. I don't know if I'd call it a caution so much, but one thing to always consider, and again, this is true with pretty much everything that we're using, as new products or as new pathways of bioproducts come down the line and become available to us, we always have to consider what's the variability in those sources, right? And it's true with ingredients. So do you have, and those would be questions to ask for with those that are, you know, if you're having a discussion with somebody about using a biocholine, for example, you know, what's your, as they increase efficiencies of their production, has that changed the bioavailability, the digestibility of those sources? And sometimes those can be quite variable. So, that's something we need to keep in mind always anyway, but they certainly have become a fairly popular alternative to the standard choline chloride.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for that explanation. So let's dig back into choline chloride itself and tell me about, you talked about its water loving nature. What about putting it in the diet liquid versus a carrier based product? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah. So I actually haven't spent a lot of time looking at a liquid source of choline. Sort of, again, considering the challenges of using our traditional dry source, right? So if my first thought would be as a liquid, if combines or has this desire to combine with other, so that would, as a liquid, that would make it easier to put into the diet to disperse, right? So you could spray, I'm assuming that, you know, they could spray it in, et cetera. So that would certainly disperse it a little bit. And that may then also help with the binding of the other minerals, right? So you're not adding it to your mineral premix, obviously, because it's going to bind with those, but you're adding it as its own.
Tired of solving swine nutrition challenges alone? The Swine Nutrition Inner Circle connects swine nutritionists who share real insights on formulation, ingredient variability, and diet adjustments. When you need clarity, experts are just a conversation away. Join at swinenutritioninnercircle.com and connect with peers who understand the work you do every day.
So I'm going to jump back to our original discussion a little bit. You mentioned using choline in sow diets and not as much in grow finish. Tell me about the why that's necessary in the sow. We'll go back to a little bit of the physiology just so I understand the importance again.
Sure. Well, probably most of it is related to need, total need. So if you look at a grower pig, for example, if you were adding choline strictly to the diet, you'd be looking at, say, 400 to maybe 600 milligrams per kg, right? Whereas in the sow, you're looking at 1,250, right? So I haven't seen a lot of work more recently with specifically with choline and the sows, but at least in humans, we see it a little bit more in humans.
What I heard you say is, you know, we have a lot of research to support the use in swine herds of kind of the original choline chloride, learning about alternative, I want to say consistencies, I don't know the right word, but liquid versus, a carrier type. Still availability is the same and it's still a standard dietary need.
Yep.
It's time for our famous three.
Broiler Savvy, the pioneering AI-powered solution for broiler gut functionality and metabolic efficiency insights. Cargill Animal Nutrition and Health Pork Solutions delivers trusted, data-driven nutrition and business support, helping you build more profitable, confident pork systems. KT Pacer, 50 years designing and building feed transportation equipment focused on quality, workmanship, and performance. BinSentry, the most trusted feed monitoring solution in the world. Sunhe is a professional solution provider for enzymes, probiotics, and functional additives. We offer customized formulas to target nutritional issues in livestock and maximize the utility of animal feed. Find us on sunhe.com for more information.
All right. Well, we're rounding out our time together. I want to say thank you to our listeners. If you have questions or comments, you can send those through on your podcast platform. Also, if you liked our show today, will you give us a thumbs up? We'd appreciate that. A trademark of our Swine It podcast is to ask our guest a few thought-provoking questions to expand our knowledge and keep us thinking. So, Crystal, excuse me, what's a book or resource that's your go-to in your area of expertise?
Yes. So I'm still a NRC user or NASM. I'm very much looking forward to the new one coming out. As I train grad students, it's a very valuable resource for me, and I still go back to it quite regularly.
Yeah, and I hear that from a lot of nutritionists. So it definitely is kind of the go-to when especially universities, right, where you're in a teaching role. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So how about a book or resource not related to the swine industry that you recommend we check out?
Yeah. So I don't have a whole lot of time to sit down with a book outside of work, which makes me sad. It's kind of a vacation thing for me. It's a book that I open every day would be my Bible. I find time for that one every day. But yeah, if I'm going to pick up a book, I like the old classics. I like going back to reading like some of the really old ones, ones I remembered reading from high school and didn't appreciate. Then I, To Kill a Mockingbird, for example, we were talking about that more recently. Those are my fun ones to go back to.
Yeah. So some foundational, research in nutrition and foundational things to go back to and read when we were, you know, developing. So,
yeah,
absolutely. So how about the last one is share an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets successful professionals apart from others?
Yeah, boy, that's tough. I've thought about that question for a little while. A couple of things come to mind, I guess. Resilience would be one. Often those that are successful, those are often the people that we go to first, or you see them as, oh, let's make that person the leader. But jeepers, things change all the time. Like it's hard to keep, even in the world of, nutrition or medicine's probably no different. It's changing all the time. And to be able to share or inspire you know, a next generation or even inspire your same generation, we need to have that ability to be resilient. And AI is one of those things, right? Well, AI, not as artificial insemination, but artificial intelligence. I'm not going to say my age, but I could, you know, it gets harder and harder all the time. And somehow we have to be resilient. We have to hang on to what we know and figure out how to embrace the new and not throw away our old. And that's a tough thing. And so to me, leaders are people that really understand how to do that. How do I be resilient? How do I take the new and not lose my original, right? My foundation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, you know, even most important in academia, right? And in science and research, to not forget all the foundational things that we have and the research that we've done along the way with less tools, both in, you know, I think like diagnostics, molecular, you know, measuring, et cetera, but also in, you know, now the capability to take data and really make quick use of it versus when we used to, you know, have to enter data itself. So I think you're exactly right. The resilience to adapt to those changes and to still, you know, lead others to make good decisions. So no, that's a great one.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Levesque, for your time today. Appreciate you spending a few minutes with me talking about choline, its uses, and getting to know you better. So appreciate your time on the SwineNet podcast.
Thank you again. It's fun. These are always fun.
All right. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.